3 o'clock hour of the Burns and Gambo show on this Thursday. Thanks for hanging out with us here. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, Sarah Cazell, Bear filling in for Jordan today. Like I teased it when we went into the break, it is a conversation that over the 10 years that Gambo and I have done the show together, I've lost track of the number of times we've had a conversation about Fitz and whether Fitz is going to end his career with the Arizona Cardinals. Will he end it somewhere else? Should he leave? Does he want to leave? Would any team be interested? I mean, every time his contract has come up, it seems like we've had these conversations. And there was a stretch there for a while, about 5 years ago, where it felt like we were getting peppered, Gambo, with suggestions from listeners that the Cardinals somehow like owe it to Fitz to trade him somewhere where he has a better chance to win. And it seemed like at least for a couple of years, it was a little dicey as to whether he was going to be back or not. Those days are long gone now. Now it's, if he plays, it's with the Cardinals, and if he doesn't, he's not going to play. But there is a suggestion coming out of a Pittsburgh website that given the kind of the scattered nature of their organization right now and their wide receiver room, there's a suggestion that the guy they should target in free agency is none other than Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah,
and that's a very interesting suggestion.
Yeah, SB Nation, Behind the Steel Curtain website, covers the Steelers, and they basically say, you know, they go into an offseason, they got some question marks and everything, and they say, you know, that the guy the Steelers should target is Larry Fitzgerald. And they say, now you may be thinking to yourself, why should the Steelers be spending money on a 37-year-old Larry Fitzgerald? But the answer is really quite simple. This wide receiver group has never really had a mature veteran leader teaching the young guys how to be men in the NFL. The perfect man for that job is Larry Fitzgerald. In fact, I would go as far to say no player in this league could challenge Fitzgerald as being a better man. And he talks about how young, you know, the wide receiver core is, that the oldest guy is Deontay Johnson at 24, and then Juju Smith-Schuster, and he would, you know, change the room. And then he also says in the article that Fitz would get more opportunities with Pittsburgh than he is with Arizona. And he says he could end his career right where it started. With the possibility of Smith-Schuster leaving town, he might actually receive more playing time than he would if he was playing in Arizona. Return to Heinz Field, where, you know, he was a member of the Pitt Panthers football team because they share the stadium, right? So he could, you know, so they're bringing up they should sign Larry Fitzgerald. Now, our belief is totally that Fitz is only going to play in Arizona. It's what he said. I take him at his word for that. I can't even imagine another team would even try to see if he was, you know, interested, because he has been so adamant that he's going to end his career here in Arizona.
Never hurts to ask, right? Never hurts to ask. Doesn't hurt the Pittsburgh Steelers,
not.
Too.
I mean, has anybody asked in the past? I mean, he has made it very clear that if he doesn't play for the Cardinals, he's not going to play for anybody else.
He has, and I'll be honest, I don't want this to come across as like arrogant or anything. I'm on the scale of things that I worry about as a sports fan. Larry Fitzgerald leaving the Cardinals and finishing out his career with the Pittsburgh Steelers doesn't even really register. I mean, it's an interesting thing to think about. It's an interesting thing to talk about, and that's what we do. That's our job here on the Burns and Gambo show. But in terms of, like, am I really concerned that this could actually happen?
No.
No, not at all. No. Not one bit.
It would be the biggest shocker that we've had in this town in forever.
Yeah.
Now, like, you think of a player leaving that shocked you more than this one did. When Randy Johnson left, we knew he was going to leave. When Schilling left, we knew he was going to leave. When Gonzo was done, you knew he was going to leave. I mean, when Keith Kachuk got traded, like, we knew he was going to get traded. Like, we knew it. We just didn't know to who, but we knew he was going to get traded. You start to go through it. I mean, you know, when Nash left to go to the Lakers, were we surprised? No. When Amari left to go to the Knicks, were we surprised? No, we weren't surprised. You know, when was the last time you were shocked by a guy leaving? You're like, oh, my God, I can't believe he left. I mean, do we have an example?
Okay. No, not a perfect example.
Paul Goldschmidt? Come on, we knew it.
I've got, like, parts of examples.
Okay.
You know, the part about Nash leaving that shocked me was the Lakers. That was the part that shocked me. In the moment, as a the fanboy in me was like, God, of all the places, not there, right? Like,
I think you always tell the story when I broke that story nationally, and I think you always say that you were in the movie theaters when it happened, right?
I was Spider-Man. I was at the Amazing one of the Spider-Man movies. I think one of the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies, the first or the second one, I can't remember. And I came out and I looked at my phone, and no lie, I had to sit down. I had to sit down. I was like, oh, honey, hold on, I gotta sit down for a second here. She's like, why? What's wrong? The Suns just traded Steve Nash to the L.A. Lakers. She's like, what? And she sat down next to me. I mean, I had to sit. I was just so overwhelmed by, oh, my God, I can't believe that. Because I got the text from you. I turned my phone off during the movie. And so was I shocked that he wasn't a member of the Suns? No. Was it shocking that he was with the L.A.? Yes, I was shocked that he was with the L.A. Lakers.
Right. But when have you really been surprised with it? And I might be missing an example. I'm trying, it's going through my mind.
Well, Schilling, Bear might have had one. Bear, do you have one?
The Eric Bledsoe thing was pretty shocking.
Nobody cared for him that
and
much.
The Goran Dragic was also shocking to me.
Okay, I could buy the Dragic one a little bit. I don't think the fans really ever loved Bledsoe. The Dragic one, okay, I'll buy that.
Dragic is a good one.
But I'm thinking star players. Randy Johnson,
yeah,
Kurt Schilling,
yeah.
Luis Gonzalez, no. Paul Goldschmidt, no. We kind of had a feeling that it could happen. We knew they couldn't pay him.
I have one.
Go ahead.
I have one. Okay, it's an older one, but
Barkley?
I have it. Marley. You did what? You traded Dan Marley to the Cleveland Cavaliers for Hot Rod Williams? It's like somebody just cut me off at the knees. You talk about remembering where you were.
Happened.
I can remember exactly where I was when Dan Marley got traded to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Exactly.
I'm going to look up the year that happened. I don't believe I was here when that happened.
I don't think you were. I think it was
94. I came in 96,
if I remember right.
97. I came around 96.
Summer of 94 or summer of 95. I think it was the summer
of 95.
So
tell me about that. Was it a shock?
Well,
to
just
the world?
Because he was so popular. He had bars and restaurants, and he was this good-looking guy, and he was good, and he was part of the culture with KJ.
Not really good-looking guy, but okay. Sorry, Marley. Sorry.
October 7th, 1995.
1995. Okay, so it was about a year before I got here.
Yeah.
He got traded.
And that was just like, what the bleep just happened? That to me would be the closest thing to being would be the closest thing to watching Larry Fitzgerald go finish his career with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And they tried to make up for it. They brought him back, and he was actually pretty good when they brought him back. And he got to play in a Suns uniform a couple more years, if I remember right, when it was all said and done.
If Warner had gone to the 49ers.
Oh, that would have been one.
What are you doing, Kurt? Right?
Yep.
So, like, if Fitz,
what are you doing, Cardinals? What are you doing, letting him go? That wouldn't even be a "What are you doing, Kurt?" That'd be a "What are you doing, Cardinals?" You can't let him go to the Niners.
He just went to the Rams. Okay, we kind of was at towards the end. That wasn't as big of a deal.
We've received a couple tweets. If you guys want to hear them,
tell me. I'd love to hear some.
So
I would love to.
Don Burt says Max Scherzer. They told us for years that he would be great, and then they traded him.
He was a nobody when they traded him. We thought he was going to be a reliever.
Here's another one.
That's what they told us. He's going to be a relief pitcher.
Someone said, whose Twitter handle is Ravens and Suns, says Anquan Boldin to Baltimore. And then one last one. Tyler Meisterheim says it wasn't a trade and it wasn't his choice, but when John Chyka didn't bring back Donor.
But he didn't go anywhere else. If Donor would have, and when Donor was on his magical mystery tour, because we're such good friends, I was reporting Shane Doan's in New York visiting the Rangers. Then Shane Doan's in Philly visiting the Flyers. Shane Doan's in Vancouver visiting the Canucks. So I had all of those stories. But I knew he was never going to leave because we talked about it on a regular basis. I knew everywhere he was, and I was the first to report where he was going to be, but I knew he wasn't going to go anywhere.
What about
Justin Upton? When he was going to these places, he didn't want to go anywhere else.
Justin Upton wasn't a surprise because Kevin Towers basically telegraphed that trade for 2 years.
Uh-huh.
He had been talking about wanting to trade Justin Upton for 2 years.
Randall was shocked by it. Our listener, Randall. Well,
I'm looking at Randall's tweet right now, and I tweeted him back, and I said, "Not." And I said the same thing. We knew it was coming. Towers was shopping him.
What was the second one, Sarah? What was the second one you mentioned?
Sorry, say that again.
What was the second one you mentioned?
Max Scherzer and Quan Bolden.
Bolden's
don't or not being brought back. Yeah,
there is Bolden not a great example. I do not have a great example.
I mean, for me,
Marion
Bolden,
Sean Marion.
Bolden's interesting. Dragic. Oh,
Sean Marion for Shaq
is.
Oh my God! I love people loved Sean Marion, The Matrix.
They did, but he was so grumpy here. You know, he was just so. Was it really that difficult to envision the Suns taking the biggest malcontent and the biggest grump on that roster and moving him somewhere? Okay, fine. You don't like it here? Go somewhere else. You know, I mean, that was kind of the culmination of 2 years of grumpiness out of Sean Marion because he always thought he was disrespected. Some of the suggestions, the Dragic one is interesting. The Bolden one is interesting. For me, it's Marley. That would be the comp I would come up with. When we come back, one NBA analyst would be comfortable picking the Suns to finish second in the West if they would have just done one thing differently this offseason. What's the one thing? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Say what you want about Bill Simmons. The guy knows his NBA. And a lot of NBA fans love to hear what Bill Simmons has to say about the NBA. He's written books on the topic. They've sold millions of copies. He's got a very popular podcast. He's he's kind of a media darling, a media star, and he has had over the years, of course, lots of thoughts about the Phoenix Suns. And in particular this year, he's had lots of thoughts about this current version of the Phoenix Suns. And the one takeaway from his latest podcast, Gambo, is how he thinks the Phoenix Suns are the team to watch in the Western Conference. And on his podcast with him and Ryan Russillo, they talked about Chris Paul. They talked about Mikal Bridges. They talked about Cam Johnson. They gave him lots of love. They talked about DeAndre Ayton. And when it's all said and done, Bill Simmons basically said that, look, they're 7-4. Chris Paul hasn't shot the ball that well. They're not getting a great Devin Booker season yet either, but he hasn't been bad. They're 7-4. Their two best guys haven't even really clicked yet. We know who their best players are. Their rotation makes sense. They have shooting. They have 3-and-D guys. I love the Suns. I think they're the team to watch in the Western Conference. High praise from Bill Simmons, despite all the negativity around here about how they've played in two of their last three games.
Yeah. I think people are going to look at those and understand that there's some growing pains with this team, and they're going to look at the wins more than they're going to look at the losses. They're going to look at the Denver win. They're going to look at the Utah win. They're going to look at the Jazz win. And they're going to, not that you're going to write off the losses to Detroit and Washington, but you're going to say, this is a young team, and they've got to learn how to win and stuff like that. So I do think that they're probably, when you evaluate a team, you're looking more at the good things they did, and you overlook the bad things. Because there were a lot of good things. The Utah win was as good a win as I've seen from the Suns in a long time. Defensively, that was as good a performance as I think we've ever seen from the Suns. The Denver win was a big win. And the Dallas win, even without Porzingis, right? I mean, that was a good opening win. So they've had several quality wins, and I think that's what you're looking at. And, okay, yeah, but they lost to Detroit and Washington. Okay, that's great, but it's not like all of their wins are against, Sacramento. And teams like that, their wins have been really good wins. The New Orleans win. Like, the wins have been good. And I think that's what Simmons is probably looking at more than anything else.
Yeah, here's Bill Simmons on the podcast a couple days ago.
I feel more comfortable with the Suns if I had to pick between those two teams. Because, and look, I love admitting when I'm wrong, because I'm wrong a lot. I was definitely wrong on the Chris Paul trade. I thought it was a panic trade. I didn't think they needed to give up a first-round pick, and I didn't think OKC had anywhere else to trade him. But what he's done in transforming that team, it's not just about, now they have a real point guard running the show. Like, he's completely changed how they play. They play slow. Did you see they're the last in pace? Because he wants them to be a half-court team, and they're a really good half-court team. They get good shots. I like the shots they get. He gets himself good shots. Booker can create himself really good shots. Every once in a while, they can run a little screen roll with Ayton. And they always have shooters. Bridges has been, the stats don't really show how good it seems like Bridges is.
If you missed the context at the beginning of that answer, he says he feels more comfortable picking the Suns as the second best team in the West over the LA Clippers. And at this point, he would think he could see a Suns-Lakers Western Conference Finals easier than he could see a Clippers-Lakers Western Conference Finals, which again is very high praise. But The part where he thinks the Suns might have messed this up a little bit is in what they did on draft night in not taking Tyrese Halliburton. Here's Simmons from the pod yesterday.
I actually think if they had taken them, I would say comfortably they would be
undefeated
for the Western Finals. No, I would say they're going to be the second best team. I would feel really good about saying that because you nailed it. This is why the advanced metrics people liked him so much. He didn't need to have the ball to have a real effect on games on both ends. The team's defense is always better when he's out there. The offensive efficiency, whether he has the ball or not, he just knows how to play with other guys. He's like that dude in pickup that you just want to be like, oh, I want to be on that guy's team. It'll be fun to play with that dude. How he's meshed with Fox without Fox getting threatened at all.
Of course, Halliburton is in Sacramento, yeah. But as you had reported on draft night, the Suns never really seemed to have much interest in Tyrese.
He was not on their list. He was not, you know, when I gave my list of players that the Suns would draft, and I'll never forget Vince Murata, he almost, you know, his jaw dropped when I said, no, they're not interested in Halliburton. And why? Like, I mean, why? Like, Vinny loved Halliburton, if I remember correctly. And if Vinny's listening,
right.
I think he can confirm that. I believe he loved Halliburton, and that was his guy. And so when I come up with my list on here's the players that the Suns are not going to be interested in, and I had Halliburton as one of those guys, that was more than any other player that I had ruled out. That was the player that really, I guess, resonated with a lot of the fans. Like, okay, he's a point guard. He's good. He could develop under 2 years under Chris Paul, but he just wasn't a guy for them. There were just things about his game. They thought he was more of a one over two. He wasn't as, you know, dynamic enough to play the one or the two. And they just really liked Jalen Smith. Now, Jalen Smith is going to take time, right? He's 2 years in college, but he is going to take a little bit of time to develop. But they liked Jalen Smith more. Time will tell on this one. But right now, Halliburton looks like he's a good player in this league.
Yeah, you know, he does, and I want to be somewhat cautious here because, as they even admitted in the podcast, I think it was Russillo who said, look, we all laughed when they took Cam Johnson, and he's legit. He's a legit rotation player. He matters. He's important. So I think the Suns earned themselves a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, and we talked about that on draft night when they took Jalen Smith. They've earned themselves the right to say, okay, well, y'all said we were nuts when we took Cam Johnson, and that worked out pretty well for us too, so give us a break on this one. Like you say, time will tell. I guess more than anything, my overarching takeaway is that for as much, I don't want to use the word negativity, but I know on certain fronts it has been very negative about the Suns the last week or so with the two teams that they lost to and how they lost those games. But sometimes you kind of have to hit zoom out and look at it from 30,000 feet. And I think Bill Simmons is doing a really nice job of hitting zoom out and looking at it from kind of far away and saying, okay, they're 7-4, and he's right. Chris Paul's not exactly playing his best basketball. Devin Booker's played better. We've seen it. He's been fine, but we've seen better out of Devin Booker. Jay Crowder's been real hit and miss. We all know about the struggles of DeAndre Ayton on the offensive end, and yet they're still 7-4, and they've done it against a pretty tough schedule. So maybe, you know, I'm not trying to sit here and say we should all hold hands and sing Kumbaya or anything like that about the Suns, but maybe we should do a little bit better. I'm sorry?
I've never held hands with anybody and sang Kumbaya.
You never went to church camp as a kid?
I know. I mean, I went to – I just don't remember ever singing Kumbaya. Yeah. No, I mean, I had
I can speak to that,
confirmation,
guys.
Confirmation and communion. I did all of those things.
You can speak to what? Holding hands and singing Kumbaya?
At the church camp, yeah. Been there.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah. Every summer, church camp. Camp Shadow Pines up near Heber. Oh, yeah. Holding hands and singing Kumbaya. I remember it like it was yesterday. Yeah, well, maybe the four of us on the show, when we're ever allowed to be in the same room together, we should hold hands and sing Kumbaya.
Sing Kumbaya.
Just so you can say you did it.
Yeah. I just don't ever remember holding hands and singing it.
Oh, yeah. Church camp.
Good for you.
Camp Shadow Pines.
It's honestly.
It was. It's a rite of childhood, Gambo. I'm sorry you missed out on it. You know what? It might have, based off of the way you've described your childhood, it might have helped. I'm just going to put that out there. You know, it might have softened you up a little bit as a child. You could have probably used some of that. You were too busy beating people up. It might have helped you to hold hands and sing Kumbaya.
I did. I had my communion and my confirmation and all. I had all of that. We went to church.
You needed a venue to ask forgiveness for beating people up, so I would hope you did all that.
Oh yeah, yeah. I wouldn't take I wouldn't take communion unless
priest, if you don't forgive me, I'm gonna beat you up.
I didn't do good. Yeah, I'm gonna say that to the priest. But
I'm gonna take your lunch money.
No, we were scared of the priest. We were scared. But we went to church every Sunday as a kid growing up. We always did. St. Gerard's, that was my church. St. Gerard's.
All right. But Gerard. No holding hands and no singing kumbaya.
But
you didn't get to go to summer
kumbaya.
Church camp. It was absolutely. Well, anyway, that's my point with the Suns is that
maybe
things aren't as bad as they seem.
The last taste in our mouth is that awful game against Washington. And
we
got to live with this because they keep having their games postponed.
Of course.
Like that game should have been gone. Like we should have been on to the next game. And the next, with three games now are postponed, which, Friday's postponed, and now, as I reported earlier, Saturday is postponed. So, okay, that sucks. So the last thought, the last memory you have is this Washington game, which was a total blowout, a terrible game.
Yeah, that doesn't help. There's no doubt. When we come back, the story in the NBA, nationally, of course, the huge, legit blockbuster trade that went down yesterday, the Nets shaking things up by acquiring James Harden. Was there a motive behind the motive in making that move? We'll tell you about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Talk about James Harden in a moment. I just want to add this on the back end of what Sarah just talked about in the Sports Center update. Alden Gonzalez, who is a sports reporter for ESPN, just tweeted out that the reliever market in Major League Baseball might be gaining a little bit of momentum. Liam Hendricks got his deal with the White Sox. Pedro Baez joined Houston. And Archie Bradley, according to reports, is closing in on a deal of his own. But the team is unknown at this point, according to the report. So we see if you can find out where he's going.
I'm
going
to text him right now.
Hey, Archie, tell me where you're going.
I'll try to find out.
Yeah, asking for a friend. Hey,
asking for a radio show.
Asking for a radio show. Archie, where are you going? Just out of curiosity. Hashtag asking for a friend. Just see what he says. So we'll see if we get any answers on that. Yesterday, obviously, the Harden story, and it's still reverberating today. There's no question about it. The James Harden to the Brooklyn Nets and just all of the kind of offshoots from that. I mean, there's just so much to talk about when it comes to the blockbuster that ended up with Victor Oladipo and all of those picks in Houston and Caris LeVert in Indiana. And, of course, this new threesome of James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving. And this is Adrian Wojnarowski from Get Up this morning. He said that Harden knew the Rockets were in talks with Brooklyn and Philadelphia, which is kind of why he said what he said a couple of nights ago, because he was trying to nudge things along a little bit. And with the Nets, they felt like they needed Harden for a couple of reasons. Number one, there is, frankly, some uncertainty surrounding Kyrie Irving.
Philadelphia was very much in the bidding for James Harden, but ultimately the Nets did not want to be denied. They really wanted James Harden and felt like they needed James Harden, especially because of the uncertainty that surrounds Kyrie Irving and their organization right now.
And then the other reason why they felt like they had to get him, Gambo, was because Kevin Durant himself can be a free agent at the end of next season, and they want to make sure he stays.
It gives the Nets leverage on Kyrie Irving and in his future in Brooklyn, because now because ultimately what this is about for the Nets is the future of Kevin Durant. And free agency comes up quickly again, at the end of next season. All three of these players could be free agents, but most importantly for the Nets, Kevin Durant. And they've got to know that they're going to be able to be in position to re-sign him and have at least one significant running mate moving forward with him. And James Harden allows them to have that. These two players really hatched the idea of getting Harden to the Nets in the offseason when they were working out in L.A.
So James Harden, at some level, was their insurance policy to try to keep Kevin Durant to stay.
It's expensive, year and a half expensive insurance policy.
Hell yeah, that's a Lloyd's of London right there.
Expensive insurance policy.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I mean, not only what Harden's getting paid, but also what you gave up to get him. But I think, listen, like we've said, when you're all in, you're all in. Right, if you're all in, you're all in. Like, You can't risk losing. The Kyrie is such a wild card, and so you just don't know. But I'm sure to make sure that Durant was happy. Okay, now I got Durant and Harden, and they probably feel, okay, you know, with or without Kyrie, we can win. Because Harden handles the ball just like Kyrie does. So at Durant's mind, that might be that probably was his insurance policy. He doesn't want to continue to keep, you know, moving places and going somewhere. So, okay, get me Harden, and no matter what happens with Kyrie, because I'm even sure Durant's probably shaking his head with Kyrie, like, what? Man, I don't get this dude.
Probably.
I can't. He's not reliable. You can't rely on Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, which is why, I mean, when you think about, okay, in practical terms now, how this is going to work, the guy who, I mean, let's be honest, if you're comparing resumes, right, if you're looking at what this guy did and what that guy did and what that guy did, yes, Kyrie has a championship and Harden doesn't, but Harden is the more accomplished player. He's been doing it longer. He's been doing it at a higher level for longer, and even though this year kind of went to crap for him, he's been the more reliable guy over the last few years. If anybody's going to have to learn how to live with this and maybe lessen their game a little bit, it's got to be Kyrie, right?
You know, yeah, but here's the problem with Kyrie. You know how some people are just, they're just happy when they're miserable? My father was kind of like that, right? He was always happy. He was happy being miserable. Kyrie's that guy, right? I mean, he's playing with LeBron in Cleveland and he wasn't happy. Then he goes to the Celtics and they build around team and he's not happy. Then he joins Brooklyn as a free agent. He convinces Durant to go with him and now he's not happy. Like, he's just one of those guys. And, you know, I think everybody knows somebody like that. Like, they're born to be miserable. They're born to not be happy.
The people who are only happy when it rains, right? Like the garbage song. They're only happy when it rains. It seems like Kyrie Irving I do too, but it's a song that I didn't expect you to know. But yes, I do know people who are at their happiest when things are at their worst, right?
Yeah, it's just they're used to it. That's how they live life. And Kyrie's like that. I mean, he's just, no matter what situation you put him in, you know, the guy's just miserable. I mean, he's in Cleveland winning a championship. He's miserable. He goes to Boston. They're going to build the whole team around him. He's miserable. He goes to Brooklyn now. He's miserable. He's missing all these games. I mean, Durant's, you know, this is less than a month after Durant came back, and Irving's been away for how long, and who knows how long he's going to continue to be away. And you just, you know, so this gives Durant, you know, another top-level talent guy to match with in case, you know, listen now, if Kyrie plays with them, great. You got your big three. And if he doesn't, well, you still got Durant and Harden and two guys that are at that level are very capable of winning a lot of games and maybe even a championship.
There's a story in the Washington Post today, and what it basically said is this is what Irving needs to understand. This is a quote, by the way. This is what Irving needs to understand. If he wants to win and chase championships in Brooklyn, he must be the one to adjust. Durant and Harden are perennial top five players. They have made the All-NBA first team six times each. Irving hasn't been a first teamer once. He made the second team in 2019, the third team in 2015. He's the flashier player. His 2016 NBA Finals heroics made him a champion. His signature shoes have the best design of the three, but he's neither a comparable scorer nor physical specimen. On this team, Irving must serve as a complementary piece, close quote. And therein lies the problem, Gambo. How on earth do you convince Kyrie Irving to be a complementary piece? You can barely convince him to be a star player on this team. Now he's going to be a complementary piece? Good luck with that.
Well, there's a story in Nesson, and that's a big site, that Kyrie Irving might have played his last game of 2020-2021, that he's prepared to sit out the remainder of the season among his growing frustration with the Nets and a bunch of other things. So he's missed the last five games, and the NBA is also investigating his videos for being maskless. Apparently he's irate with the organization for multiple reasons, including the hiring of head coach Steve Nash. There's reports that Brooklyn's acquisition of Harden was not approved by Irving, who reportedly was not answering the Nets' calls as recently as Wednesday afternoon. This is in Nesson. This is a legitimate, like, you know, source. The New England Sports Network. It's big. So you factor all of that in. So maybe the Nets just, you know, that's why Stephen A. Smith told him to just retire. But if this is all legitimate, right, he didn't okay Steve Nash. He didn't okay James Harden. He's prepared to sit out the rest of the season. Sit out. Go ahead. You got Durant and Harden now. you know what? And it was always going to be a disaster between Kyrie and Harden handling the ball anyway. You want to sit out, sit out. Don't play. So they'll just go with those two. But the problem is that they gave up so much, you know, high-end talent to get Harden, so it's just they're going to have to win with. And they still got a couple players, but, you know, Joe Harris can really help them. But they did give up some good players to get Harden.
Cody, if you could, on really short notice, fire off that breaking sports news sounder for me, because I have some information here that I would like to pass along as soon as I possibly can, and I need the sounder to do it.
Arizona Sports, breaking news.
Ben Nicholson Smith, verified Twitter account covers baseball. According to a source, Archie Bradley is signing with the Philadelphia Phillies. So there you go.
Wow. Okay.
I don't know what to make of that either, but he's signing with the Philadelphia Phillies.
All right.
Okay.
Archie
okay.
with the Phils.
Archie with the Phils.
I wonder what he got.
Boy, I wonder what he got, too. Yeah, there are no financial terms that have been released, just that Ben Nicholson Smith is reporting Archie Bradley, former Diamondbacks closer, is going to stay in the National League and is going to sign with the Philadelphia Phillies, according to reports. Just wanted to pass that along.
All right.
When we come back.
Go.
There it is. There it is. Archie Bradley with the Phils. Heard it from a friend. When we come back, the Coyotes, they get their season started this evening. What can we expect from the Yotes this year after they made the playoffs last year for the first time in nearly 10 years? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Tonight, the Arizona Coyotes, fresh off playoff appearance for the first time in 8 seasons. Back on the ice, the season begins this evening at Gila River Arena. They take on the San Jose Sharks, 7 o'clock. And certainly from a local standpoint, given that we haven't had Suns action since Monday and we won't through the weekend, in terms of a local team to watch, looking forward to watching the Yotes tonight. I know they've gone through a pretty big facelift, especially, you know, when it comes to their forwards and whatnot, but given the fact that they got into the postseason last year, that they won that series and advanced to the next round against the Colorado Avalanche. I know the expectations aren't high, Gambo, but I'll be curious to see what Rick Tocchet does with a new group starting tonight, especially up front.
Yeah, listen, they're going to be rebuilding very, very soon, and they're in the process of doing that now. You trade Stepan, you get a second-round pick, and you try, you know, Bill Armstrong is going to try to acquire picks and build through youth. There'll be some big trades that are made. Hopefully by the deadline, they'll move some of the dead weight out. They've already moved a bunch of players out. They got to get their salary more in line with where it needs to be. It was crazy high last year, right? You know, near the top of the cap. But a lot of key players are gone. The division's going to be extremely they got 4 games coming up against Vegas starting Monday in a row. 4 games against Vegas, 2 here, 2 there. Like, oh my goodness. It's actually 2 there, then 2 here. That's a tough – Vegas is great. Like, they're a Stanley Cup team. 4 in a row against Vegas. So, but I think what's going to happen with this team is you're going to see – you know, they were a great penalty kill team. They had one of the best penalty kill units in the NHL the last 2 years. And now, when you know, with Brad Richardson gone and Vinny Hinostroza gone and Grabner gone and Soderstrom gone, you know, they're down 5 or 6 of their top PK guys. So that's going to really struggle. I think their penalty kill will struggle. They don't have a right-handed centerman for the draws. I think that's going to hurt them a lot. They don't have the ability to outscore teams. You know, they just can't outscore a lot of these teams. When you play St. Louis, when you play Colorado, when you play some of these teams that can really, really put the puck in the net, that's where they're going to struggle. They need Keller, Schmaltz, and Kessel to score. But none of those guys are inside players. None of those guys crash the net. So, you know, that's going to be difficult. But, yeah, Keller, Schmaltz, and Kessel will be the guys that they really rely on to get some scoring. So I think it's going to be a tough year. Maybe they could fight for that fourth spot with San Jose and with Minnesota. Maybe they could do that. But I think in some ways what Armstrong is going to try to do is try to keep the team somewhat competitive while they start this rebuilding process that they desperately need to have.
The inability to score is nothing new for the Coyotes, right? I mean, that's something they've struggled with for years, so it's something they're quite accustomed to. And we talked with Rick Tockett yesterday. He was on with us to kind of preview the opening of the season, and we asked him about the newcomers and what he's seen from
them. I really liked Broussard has actually really impressed me in camp. I know the last couple of years haven't gone his way, but he seems like a renewed vigor here. Like, he sees a chance where he can play some minutes for us. We need that veteran leadership. We lost a lot of veteran leadership here, with the guys that have left. So he's really come in there. Pitlick, I've really liked. A really good, solid up-and-down winger, does the right things, good skater. Gritty Kajulik, a young guy that we picked up. Bill picked up late, who can play up and down the lineup. He's a small guy, but he plays bigger than his size, and that's really helped. So, now we got to find we lost a bunch of penalties. Now we got to find penalty killers. So that's the one key that we've been really searching for the last 11 days.
Well, with the inability to score, and it's been such a problem for them, it's going to put renewed pressure, and it's been like this since before I can remember, on the goaltenders to stand on their head and go above and beyond every single night when they're just not going to have a lot of offense to work with, which means another heavy emphasis on Raanta and Kemper all year long to A, stay healthy, and B, be very, very good, whichever one of them gets the start on any given night.
Yeah, they're going to have to play good defense and try to win those, 2-1 games, 3-2 games, because, again, I don't think they're going to outscore many teams. And like I said, Keller, Schmaltz, and Kessel. Their lineup tonight, it's going to be Hayden, Schmaltz, and Garland as the top line. Then it'll be Keller, and then the two guys Tock just mentioned, Broussard and Pitlick, are going to be on the second line. So Keller, Broussard, and Pitlick. Your third line is going to be Kajula, who he just mentioned as well, Dvorak, and then Kessel. And then your fourth line, as I broke earlier today, Lawson Crouse is going to play. He has cleared the COVID-19 protocols, so he will play tonight on the fourth line with Fisher and Larson. So that's your four lines going into the game. I like the second line. I like Keller, Broussard, and Pitlick. I think that line could do some damage. Not a Kessel fan. He's got to get moved. I mean, the guy's just, never in great shape, and just, you could hide that and mask that in Pittsburgh, but here, it's obvious. There's so much talent in Pittsburgh that he could just hang around, get some goals. And they love him. Here, when they're asking him to, be a leader and stuff, he's not, his inability to step up, and I just don't think that he could do it. So, I don't know that you can rely on Phil Kessel for much. But those are your four lines, going in today. And, Demers and Olive Oil will be your top defensive pairing with Goligoski and Chickern, and then Osterley and Hjalmarsson will be your third matchup as they take on San Jose tonight. And, a big first game because this is a team that I expect that they're going to battle with for one of those, for that maybe that fourth spot to get into the playoffs, San Jose. Donor was on the other day, and he really likes this San Jose team. So, these are the ones you're like, okay, you have extra emphasis on these games against San Jose and Minnesota.
And keep in mind, San Jose, and for people who were not aware, they have temporarily relocated to Arizona because of the COVID-19 restrictions in California. So the Sharks are here and have been here for a few weeks getting ready for the season. So it's a home game for the Coyotes, but for now it is also the home of the San Jose Sharks for the foreseeable future. Just to put everything into context, and I know you despise these, but I think this is a good way to do exactly that, put things in context. On ESPN's preseason NHL power rankings, they had the Coyotes 24th out of the league, which feels about right. They've got the Sharks 25, but they're only, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams that are lower than the Coyotes on this list. And again, given the turnover that they had balanced with the success they had last year, that feels about right. That feels like about the right spot for them to be.
The trade deadline this year will be April 12th. The regular season is going to end May 8th. So you'll have about a month left in the season when the trade deadline comes because it's going to come so quickly, right? The season just started yesterday, and then you'll have January, you'll have the rest of January, then February, March, and then you'll have your trade deadline. If they're out of it, and they could be, if they're out of it, you might see just massive changes. If they're in it, it'll be interesting because do you try to make the playoffs and then not move some of your players? They got to get off of Larson's contract. It's one of the worst contracts in the NHL. He's just a terrible player, and he's just no good, and he's not a leader. And They got to get off of that contract. It's rated as the fifth worst contract in the National Hockey League. That's how bad that deal is. And Kessel, you got to, I mean, Kessel, like, if he doesn't deliver, I think he's got to go too. Like, he's just, you know, those two guys got to go. They got to go, and you got to start over, and you got to get draft picks, and you got to get younger assets, and you got to move on. Got to move on from some of this dead wood that is going to hold this organization back.
Top story of the day when we come back. The Phoenix Suns, their third consecutive game has been postponed. All the details as we know them next on the Burns and Gambo Show.